You're listening to Stories That Matter, a Hawkwood podcast. In this episode, we hear from Tim Redfern, or Timberlina, the world's premier ecologically minded drag queen. Tim was an artist in residence at Hawkwood earlier this year, and in this episode, the music you'll hear is Tim playing on our grand piano.
I'm Tim Redfern. I am, I suppose a simple answer would be I'm a performance artist working often in drag. I like to class myself as a drag lady, this eccentric sort of Middle England character with a beard who roams the land, often hosting bingo or more recently and more often sing songs relating to impending environmental meltdown. What brings me to Hawkwood, yes, is really writing and just having some time to actually reflect on what I'm doing as an artist. A lot of what I do, and I realise I've done for the past, best part, 10 and 15 years, is facilitating others or facilitating opportunities for other artists, which I realise has been a sort of smokescreen for me actually being an artist. So I'm trying to adjust the way in which I do things, and I felt that going to an artist retreat would give me an opportunity to actually focus more on myself and my creative sort of urges rather than my general distractions, which are getting other people involved in things. For me, it's a very personal thing, and it has to do with dressing up in women's clothing, and it has to do with both sort of, I suppose, that fine line between transvesticism and also gender fluidity. I feel that within myself as an individual, there's definitely a strong femininity and a strong masculinity, which is also why I keep the beard, because I like to create the ambiguity that is that line, really, between masculinity and femininity. So for me, the element of drag, in inverted commas, is not sort of trying to get away as passing as a female or a woman or being an impersonator. For me, which is also why I like use the term drag lady, for me it's much more about conspiring to be more feminine in my male body, as I would be more male in my male body, perhaps, you know, doing, I don't know, butch pursuits like cutting wood or gardening and those kind of things, which I also do. Timberlina is my character name. One of the aspects of, I suppose, my creative life, so to speak, is exploring what that means. And I think right now, I spent quite a lot of time exploring Timberlina as an extension of, as sort of the feminine extension of myself. And I think now it's definitely much more of a character. It's much more for me, it's much easier for me to deal with Timberlina as a character. Simply because it's quite emotional, because once you start sort of dealing with how you're being perceived and, you know, maybe what your internal expectations are versus what the outside world is telling you, I you know, would have found that quite difficult to contend with. And so more recently I've sort of thought, well, rather than have this constant ambiguity or self-antagonizing sort of idea of what this person, this extension of self is, well, let's just call it a character and put it in a safe box and not worry about sort of dealing with it. And I think also that also reflects queer culture as it is now, LGBTQICA, whatever you want to call it these days. It's, you know, because there's a much broader spectrum of identity, maybe, than even when I sort of started performing. And I've always been a queer performer. I'm very resolute in that. So for me, it offers me a quieter life, really, just to think of Timberlina as a character. And also it allows me to play with that role in a different, more fun way, which I like. I like work that engages audiences, that is participative. And when I say participative, I mean that the audience is conscious that they are participating in an event. So it totally has their permission, and it might be crafty, arts and crafty, or make and doy For example, I've just resurrected a project that I started doing, nearly 10 years ago now, which is called the Molly Spoon Project, which is a history project. I also like working in heritage venues and on heritage projects as well. But this looks at the history of the Molly Spoon and the Molly Houses, which were sort of Renaissance pubs, were clandestine buildings where people would go, inns of London where people would go and cross-dress and basically hang out with like-minded individuals. They were, in a sense, the gay bars of their time. At that time, it was obviously much harder to be homosexual. But within that, they created this culture of the Molly Houses, and part of that culture was creating an identity of a sort of drag culture or a nom de plume, so to speak. And they would have these little rituals where they would give birth to this character. And so it was obviously made out of these wooden dolls. So I've sort of looked at using this idea to make little Molly spoons for kids and grown-ups. And we did that at South Bank Centre and resurrected that this year, and that was great success and really, really fun, especially when you're sort of getting kids and their parents involved in queer history. Not necessarily targeting, obviously, queer audiences. And that's another thing I like to do. I don't like my work to necessarily be strictly for queer audiences. I feel that it's much more important to sort of get those ideas that you have to a more universal audience to kind of break things down and get everybody on a more equal footing. So my focus is on the environment because it's that I've sort of been a lifelong environmentalist from when I was a kid. I grew up a Quaker. My parents were involved in campaign for nuclear disarmament. As Quakers, Quakers believe in pacifism. They believe in a sort of holistic approach to dealing with the outside world, that God exists in one and everything around us, and that therefore everything is equal. Which, you know, from a very young age, was like, well, that makes perfect sense. Yeah, I'll go along with that. So I've always had that at the sort of the crux of my sort of common sense belief. And as I've grown up and as I, you know, went to university, got jobs and whatever, that belief never really went away. Maybe it would have been easier if it had done. And I think for some people, that especially if maybe, you know, you go on to have family, although having said that, having a family now would terrify me because of the future that beholds. Anyway, or may not, who knows? Anyway, so for me, the environment has always had a profound effect on me. And I've always had this very sort of another simple analogy, which is oddly in the late 70s and early 80s when I was growing up as a child kind of coming into sort of like teen very socially aware and very kind of aware of media and films and TV and stuff like that, late 70s and 80s going into my teens, there seemed to be a lot of people who committed suicide by putting hose pipes from the exhaust into their cars. And I'm not trying to trivialise that. But as an analogy for what's going on in the world, that seemed perfectly logical. It's like, well, why would you put carbon dioxide into the atmosphere if we know that it's destructive? You know, why would you do all this stuff which we know is destructive, which in any other format other than in a massive corporate context would be completely unacceptable? Captain Planet was a popular cartoon character when I was young. We haven't seen a role model like Captain Planet since the 80s. And so now I'm really seeing, like, it feels like we're back in the 80s again, you know. It feels like, even though there were these threads that continued through, it feels odd that it's a once-in-a-generation sort of movement, as I say, even though there has been this consistency. And it just makes me angry, and I don't understand it. And I don't understand why some things are acceptable for some people and not for others. I think I'm excited about pursuing a sort of more nuanced career, as specifically as an artist, that's less about facilitating the work of others and more about facilitating the work of myself. I haven't really done that before to that degree. And I've always used this distraction, this very easy distraction of like, oh yes, my work is about helping others. And I've realized that has been a ruse, it's been a smokescreen for me really wanting to create work myself and feel, I think also feeling confident. I'm excited about feeling confident about what I'm doing, and I haven't really felt confident in what I do as an art form. But I didn't go to drama school, I didn't go to perform, I never learned, but it's always self-taught. I mean, I did a three-day course on the back of a barge in Battersea. That was my initiation into performance. So I suppose I've never really had that structure of, you know, building confidence or, you know, being sure about what you do. So I've learned it all on the hoof, and I feel sort of now I'm at the point where I can actually feel confident about what I'm doing, and that feels good. A story for my life that's influenced what I do now, and well, as if I couldn't sort of be any more esoteric and sort of emotional than I have been in this interview, I suppose it would be the story of people who have died, really. And I think it's, and you know, that may, I'm not trying to, you know, death is something that happens, and I've experienced and witnessed people die in the most extraordinary and sudden and revolting ways. And often it's also happened in a way that's been very private to me, because a few of these people, nobody else really knew. They weren't necessarily in my immediate, even though they were really close friends, they weren't in my immediate circle of friends. So I've always thought that that was quite extraordinary. And so therefore, I've always really kept these people sort of close to my heart. And I do carry them around. And what I found odd this week is I have felt that what's missing from my life is an element of spiritualism. And I think I sort of gave that up in the sort of want to create drive and be more career-minded. And it's been really odd here, sort of bumping into this amazing Steiner library that you have, who, I mean, I still find him quite intimidating, to be frank. It's quite lots to take on. But I read something yesterday, and I may have misunderstood it, but from what I understood it, he was also saying that materialism is something which has allowed or enabled or has given or has been conspires to remove our spiritual side. Not necessarily spiritualism and having seances and stuff like that. That's something we can talk about later. But just this idea of being spiritual, and that idea, I think for me, that linking that spirituality into what it means to be holistic and to be part of the seasons, to wake up in the morning with a dawn chorus, to smell what the first morning dew smells like, to witness the seasons in a really visceral sense, this ever-changing but constant cycle of the weather that will be here forevermore, regardless of actually how everything transpires. I think there's something really magic in that. And of course, death is very much part of that, as is life. And so that is sort of what I take from it. I can't even remember what the question was, but it was something to do with a story. So that's my story. Am I happy? I think I am quite happy right now. I'm in the middle of the most incredible countryside, which I've always overlooked, and found myself on a mission this morning to find a post box and walked further than the post box was, but it was fine because it's a beautiful day. And it's just stunning here. I'm in a workshop with a grand piano that's all mine for the best part of a week. So yes, I am happy, and I do feel inspired, and it's great to know that this place is here and could be revisited in you know, some way, shape or form.
Thanks for listening to Stories That Matter, a Hawkwood podcast. To find out more about Hawkwood, our artist residency programme, or Tim Redfern, visit the links in the show notes. This episode was produced by Laura Bing, with music by Tim Redfern.